You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by the letters P, W, K, and
the number 8.
Oh my goodness, why?
Because it's 8 p.m.
And the PWK?
Papa Whiskey Kilo. Papa Whiskey Kilo, our favorite airport, at least while we're here.
Absolutely, I love this airport.
I do too, except our ramp is strangely empty tonight.
Oh,
what's with that?
I don't know. We need to... People, fly in so we could talk about you on the radio and look at your airplanes.
Exactly. I mean, that's all we come here for. What a disappointment that we have an empty ramp, but those beautiful blue lights, they look really, really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? That's okay, but we're here to warm up the house. It's 8 p.m., Chicago, Illinois, PWK.
You know, I've noticed that when you say Illinois, you say Illinois. It's an I-L-L. Just say, try ill. Ill.
Illinois?
That's like, what's the Family Guy? Cool Whip.
Cool Whip?
Whip. Whip. Say whip. Whip.
Cool but when
whip.
You...
Cool Whip.
All right, Stewie. But anyway...
Thank you.
But anyway, when you put all those things together, what do you get?
I get Simple Flight Radio.
How about it?
Yeah, baby.
Welcome back. It's nice to be face-to-face again.
Oh, my God. Last week was very painful.
Yeah. No. Well, it wasn't painful. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. But I tell you, we have to work so hard on those remote things. By the way, is that music over yet?
No. No, it's not.
Get it quiet.
No.
No, but I just much prefer us be live in our... Actually, we're live last week, too, but... You were in a hotel room 1,000 miles away or two, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the Skype thing, it just doesn't work so well. You got to get better internet connections when you're in a hotel.
Hey, well, you know what? We can, when I checked out of the hotel, I filled out the suggestion card and I said, please provide T1 bandwidth internet.
Yeah, fill out that. Nice. That's going to do a lot of good. Oh, my God. He put down a suggestion. Let's do it.
Yeah. Don't they know that we got radio shows coming out of hotel rooms and stuff like that?
Evidently, but now they do.
But you know what? It's good to be back. I'm glad. I love doing these shows face-to-face. And, you know, it's much better that way.
Yeah, I think so. And it's even really nice when we have our guests live, which we've done a number of times. But tonight we have some great guests that will be calling in. But I think we've got a terrific internet connection to them, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think our audience will really enjoy it.
Absolutely. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's Simple Flight Radio. We've got a great show in store for you tonight for the next 2 hours.
By the way, who are you?
Oh, I'm Al Waterloo.
And I'm Mark Heppner.
I guess I was thinking, I know who I am, but nobody else. Yeah, but
you know, you're kind of a big deal.
No, well, you are too. So, anyway, welcome, and this is going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, I was thinking we've got a couple shows coming up that are going to be at the holiday time. And it's going to be tough to maybe get guests or audience, and we may even have to do a little pre-recording. But I think what we should do after this show is spend the next couple weeks kind of reflecting and looking forward. So,
yeah,
we'll talk more about that later, maybe during our Hangar Talk session. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. But you know, today is December 16th, 2012. We're racing towards the sorts of holidays and all that. But did you get any holiday flying in this week?
Oh, my God. This has been a wonderful, wonderful week. Although I have to tell you, matter of fact, I should almost use this for my Sunday night chuckle, that I had a comedy of errors. Maybe that's a nice way of putting it. I didn't think I was going to be able to take my trip today. Weather didn't look good. I couldn't get an airplane. My car died on the way to the airport. It's never died before. The battery, the cable just kind of burned out or something.
It's like the little engine that could not.
Oh, my goodness. It was, and yet I had such a terrific flight. Got to see some family out in Iowa. And quickly made it back to make this show.
Absolutely.
Although I didn't have dinner, so thank you for this pizza that's sitting in front of me.
You know, this reminds me of a Home Alone scene, you know, when he orders the pizza, which, by the way, is my favorite holiday movie.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, no, it's my second. I'm sorry. I got to put Christmas Vacation above that.
Okay.
But anyway, no, it's just a, it's, this is kind of a, there's a Christmas tree in the lobby here at the Signature FBO, which, by the way, these people do great work for us. They even ordered your pizza for you for dinner.
Well, and truly, my car did conk out, and I managed to limp it into the airport this morning. When I got back tonight, I had to get my wife home, and I wanted to pick up our other car, so I called Maureen at the front desk at Signature Flight Support, and I said, hey, I'm on the other side of the airport. Can you get me a cab? And boom, it was one.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
so thank you, Signature Flight Support, for everything you do for us.
Definitely, definitely. But you know what? Before we get any further, you've got to make me and the rest of us laugh.
Oh, my goodness. This will be tough because I had just truly did get back. But, you know, I'm thinking back to a story. You know, pilots, where they go when they get older, they go to an old folks home, just like everybody else.
Right.
And there were four pilots that were friends at one home, and Sam, Tom, Joe, and Marcy.
Wow.
Yeah, so they just hang on. So Sam happened to be near Tom, and he kind of looked. Hey, Tom, guess how old I am? Tom says, geez, Sam, I don't know. I don't know. You look, maybe you're 87. And he goes, no, I'm 92.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
So now Sam's feeling pretty good about himself because his buddy thought he was only in his 80s when he's in his early 90s. So he goes over to his buddy Joe. Hey, Joe, guess how old I am? And Joe looks at him and thinks, you know, that guy looks pretty good. I'm going to say you're 85. And he goes, no, I'm 92. Yeah, so he said, boy, he's feeling good now. He says he wants to impress the ladies. So he goes over to Marcy. And he says, Marcy, guess how old I am? And Marcy looks at him, and she looks him in the eyes and says, take off your pants. What? Take off your pants. So he takes off his pants, and she looks at him some more and looks at his boxers, and she says, drop your boxers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he looks around, a little embarrassed, but he drops his boxers, and she steps up to him and takes her hand and... let's just say she grabs him. And
oh,
kinda,
man.
Yeah, she's kind of working her magic down there.
Sounds like a first-class medical.
Yeah. Either that or the TSA. And she looks him straight in the eye and says, you know, you're 92.
Whoa.
Wow. And he looks at her and goes, that's amazing. How did you figure that out? And she says, well, I heard you tell Tom.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Did I make you laugh?
Ulterior motives.
Yes. Something like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, you mentioned medical. I actually have my medical next month.
Are you nervous?
You know, at my age, I always am. But I because of something I'm doing for the arthritis, I have to get an eye doctor appointment. That was this last week. That went well. I always try to get that stuff done in advance of seeing my AME in January, so I think it should be okay.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. I know the AME that you go to came to one of our flying club breakfasts, and he's a great guy.
Oh, my God, he's terrific. Dr. Chen and 3 Mike Yankee and down in the Peoria area.
Absolutely. Talk about. I think he, doesn't he do some support for the AOPA and all that?
Yeah, if you go out to the medical, the forum, and you do the medical board, I forget, you know, where you can exchange blogs. He's always been very, very active there. He's closely tied to Oklahoma City and as well as to AOPA and Frederick.
Yeah.
And just a great guy, great advocate. He has a Seminole. He's not a Seminole. He's got a Seneca, excuse me. I hope he's not listening.
Yeah.
He made me make a mistake. But he's a very safe pilot and committed to the aviation community. You know what? We should have him on the show.
Yeah, that would be good. You know, he actually inspired one of my very first blog articles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just taking ownership of your other half.
Oh, that's right. I remember. How you know, you look pretty svelte. How you doing on
svelte.
That?
Svelte. What's that?
Like your weight looks good.
Oh, well, thank you. I've been working hard at it.
Yeah.
Chipping away. You know what? I figured out if I could lose some pounds, we could... That could translate into another 45 minutes of fuel.
That's exactly right. Either that or going to have to learn how to burn you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've got a motivation now that's just that much more fuel you can carry on.
Absolutely.
On an airplane. Now I'm like, you'll see me outside running around in circles now.
I took an SR-20 to Cedar Rapids today,
uh-huh.
And I called... the gentleman you'll be flying with in that airplane tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, you know, I want to top it off, but how much fuel? I don't want to come back with too much fuel in it. And so he asked about your weight, and I told him what I thought. And so I thought, you know what, this is working out good. I think you can take more fuel than you could have just a month ago.
Right, absolutely. No, I think that's great. Yeah. So did you have a good flight, though, out to Cedar Rapids?
I don't know where to start. The flight to Cedar Rapids was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an instrument rated pilot, but I don't know as a weekend pilot if I get all that kind good experience. And we had low clouds there today, and I couldn't cheat because there's a NOTAM for the ILS 27 at Cedar Rapids that you can't use the autopilot below, I think it's 1900 feet. So that kind of forces you to hand fly it.
Yeah, I like that.
And it was a low deck, and there was, you know, temperatures were right at zero, and so I'm looking for the ice and all that, and that was cool. But then even cooler was coming back here. I'm going to take half the show talking about this because it was so exciting. Did the old taking off in Cedar Rapids, very low deck, coming through a couple, and then all of a sudden you bust out to blue sky. I looked over at my wife, who's not, as you know, the most enthusiastic flyer in the world, and she just had this big smile on her face, and I did too, and we both looked at each other. That was cool.
That's awesome.
And then we got here, and it was nighttime, and the temperature was -1 Celsius, and we were in the clouds, and I got a flashlight, because this is an SR-20, so it doesn't have the TKS going.
Right.
And I'm watching for ice, and... the strobes are going. I probably should have turned off because we're in the clouds, and I see her looking down in her lap, probably praying or something. And then to bust out and see that wonderful runway lights, the reels and the pappies. I don't know. It was great.
Absolutely. No, I think that is great. That sounds great. I had a very similar flight this today. I flew down with a club member. He's actually been on the show before. And we flew down to Champaign, Illinois in the Piper Dakota.
KCMI.
KCMI to pick up his daughter and his daughter's roommate from college. And I tell you what, the Dakota is the perfect moving van back from college. I put some videos on SparkReel on our
SparkReel.com.
SparkReel.com, the flying group. Check it out. It's pretty cool.
Hello.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That sounds like carb ice, which we got a lot of today, by the way.
I heard that. Not today or yesterday?
Well, both days.
You know, that's not amazing to me. It's just a wake up. Somehow I think of the high performance planes, you know, usually they're fuel injected, and I don't think about the carb ice, and you got it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yesterday when we flew up to Madison, Wisconsin.
Mike Sierra November.
I
got to do the letters.
Jet Room.
Since we're having the Sesame Street theme.
Tonight's show is brought to you by PWK.
And the number 8.
And the number 8. But, we lost. So we were in the Piper Dakota and that. And although we weren't getting any structural ice, we were getting carburetor ice. And we got a lot of it. Almost, in a 10-minute period, the manifold pressure dropped by 5 inches.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really good. And it's kind of a neat feeling. You put it on. You turn your carburetor heat on, and it clears the carburetor out. Within, you know, five to 10 seconds, and you see it's really cool. I like watching to see how much manifold pressure you have your throttle set at, and you know, compare, you know, where it was, what the carburetor ice actually did to
that's cool. You know, all these things that we're talking about, and everyone in our audience knows this, it's a great learning experience, and the learning is accompanied by just a good feeling.
Yeah.
And then you shared it with others too.
Right.
And now we're sharing it with even more.
Exactly.
Right. So
if you were flying on December 16th, but not in 2012, if you were flying on December 16th, how would you share aviation? How was aviation shared back in the day? Did anything cool happen?
I'm sure it did. And I suspect you want me to talk about one of those dates right now.
Well, you know what? I'll start. I found this. This is actually really cool. Back in 1951, the first turbine helicopter took flight.
Was that a Sikorsky?
No, it was a Karma, and I just...
Karma or Kamen?
Yeah. You know what? Actually, here it is. I found it. I had a... It's a Kamen. K-225 turbine helicopter, and that was the first turbine helicopter.
Oh, no
that
kidding.
Took flight. Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder what kind of turbine engine that was in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I only,
but,
we can only
but yeah,
it
made
so
its first maiden flight.
Well, that was before my time, not by much, but
woo!
Before my time.
Yeah,
this week in aviation history, or this day in aviation history, is 1979, and I remember this, but I suspect you don't.
I don't even think I was merely a thought back then.
Yeah, really. Okay, well, let's not go there. Let's get off that topic. But in 1979, and I do remember this.
Yeah.
When I ask you to think of SSTs, supersonic transports, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Concorde.
Concorde, absolutely. So in 1979, the Concorde, on this day, made its first flight over the Atlantic from New York to London in under 3 hours.
No way.
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 Guess what the average speed was?
900 miles an hour.
Meh.
Thumbs up,
higher.
Thumbs up, higher. 1,025.
Higher.
1,150.
You're close. 1,172 miles per hour.
Yeah.
That's an average.
Cooking.
That's moving along.
That is that. Seriously, can you imagine getting to Europe in 3 hours?
No, what is that? Normally, it's like what a 7 hour flight, right?
I had a okay. So this is going back to my days at U of I and the nerdiness that definitely was bred into me. But they had my friends and I. We had a this. It was interesting. It was like made by Airline Intervideos or something like that. It was some interesting company, but they would ride along in the cockpits and film videos and do systems reviews and show like a cockpit footage of a flight. And we had a Concorde video, and it was neat to watch because they showed this one really cool thing that when the airplane went supersonic, mm-hmm. the fuselage heated up and it expanded. So it was like it was stretched out. So you could actually, there was a panel where the flight engineers sat that when the airplane was on the ground, it was butt up against the wall or the bulkhead. But by the time they were supersonic at altitude, the fuselage had stretched and there was a little, you know, gap that you could slide your hand in between the wall and the flight engineer panel.
And that this is in the Concorde?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the nose moving. Are you serious? I mean, it
yeah.
was... Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
No way.
Way.
No, you know the nose moved, too. You know
no,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
But there was I think on one of the last flights before the Concorde was retired, one of the flight engineers jammed his hat into it.
That's pretty
I
cool.
I gotta find that movie.
Yeah, I wanna check that out.
That would be Nerdy Flying Club talk.
Speaking of Flying Club, I mean, I know we're supposed to get on with the next part of the show, but we got to talk about yesterday, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So we had, as a flying club, Leading Edge Flying Club at Poppy Whiskey Kilo. By the way, again, here I am out in Iowa, and they all clear me to the Palwaukee Airport. They don't call it Chicago Executive.
No, they do not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. But anyway, I digress. So we were going to take three of our planes and some other planes of owners of other planes that are members of the club and go to Janesville, Wisconsin, Juliet Victor Lima.
Yeah.
And join a flying club from Madison, Wisconsin, the Capital City Flying Club.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they call it Cap City, I guess. and then Winnebago Flying Club from Oshkosh.
Right.
And then Baraboo. Was it just Baraboo Flying Club?
Yeah, Baraboo. They actually, it's interesting that that flying club is in Baraboo, and then they have a couple planes that rotates between three towns, Baraboo being kind of the hub.
That's kind of a neat
idea. Yeah, it was neat.
So we were supposed to, and the weather just wasn't great, right? We had low IFR, or at least IFR. I don't know how low at some points it was.
Right.
And Winnebago had airplane access issues, which really ties in well to our show tonight, by the way.
Yeah.
And so we had three planes, a 310, which is not part of our club, a Diamond, which is not part of our club, but it was the Diamond that had that viral video where the
guy proposed
to his wife, so we took that up. And then the Dakota from our club.
Right.
And we flew up to Madison, and the folks at Capital City Flying Club, or Cap City, they got a private conference room there, and we had, what, 20, 30 people in the room?
Yeah.
And actually, we took some pictures. Those may make it up to the AOPA site. I'm not sure. We'll put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, definitely. Put it up on Facebook, and it was just cool.
It was better than cool. It was great, and we got to meet a lot of great people, and I'm so excited for us to continue this. You know, I love all of our members, but to extend our reach and have an extended family, I just thought was so cool, and to use the airplane to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought we're going to do that again.
Yeah, definitely. That was such a great outreach, and you know, there's a fellow podcaster that we met.
You know,
there.
You told me that, and I always listened to those guys. When I heard, you know, I met the guy as Kent.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to those guys. I had no idea. I didn't put two and two together that was him.
Yeah.
And he's selling a Mooney, by the way, an Ovation, a 1995. But
good looking airplane.
A very good looking airplane, and cared for. He tells me quite well. So that was nice to talk to him, but I would like to talk to him on the communications front with the podcast and us doing the live radio show and all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a small world.
Yeah, it was really cool to see some of the talk with people in aviation and really kind of learn what they're about. And hey, you know what? He was one of the original podcasters.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a great job, and I don't even know if they're still on.
Yeah.
I just got a tweeter that said how much for the Mooney. The Mooney was, and I don't quote me on this. Boy, I want to say Kent's going to shoot me. You know what? I have it. I don't know. It's between 150 and 170. I'm going to say, and I might be wrong, but I think that's about where it is. But for our tweeter, I got your name and your address, and I'll let you know. I'll send you a picture, actually.
Yeah.
But it's a fast bird and burns just as much as this guy's SR20 that just tweeted me.
Right. Well, that's great. So, what do you think? You know, we've been here in Chicago. We're starting to get into the season of ice.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Do you think ice is a factor right now down in Nashville, Tennessee?
You know, I don't know. Sometimes ice just comes up and bites you. And today, like I said, I was in it, and there wasn't that much ice, and yet it was juicy and all that. But let's find out what's going on in Nashville.
Let's find out. Let's see what the temperature is and see if we would have to contend with that.
Nashville International Airport. Automated weather observation. 0224 Zulu. Wind 190 at 07. Visibility 10. Sky condition clear. Temperature 14 Celsius.
Nice.
Dew point 11 Celsius. Altimeter 2979.
Yeah, not too bad. Almost 59 degrees. What's 14 degrees Celsius? Is that 54?
Well, 15 would be 59, so just under there, like you said.
Yeah, 54 degrees, something like that, 53.
Yeah, well, and it was 40 here. It was funny. I don't know if funny, but it was interesting. You know, I was just above the cloud deck going, which way was it going? I forget if it was this morning or coming back. And it was 5 degrees Celsius, and as soon as I went in the clouds, just, you know, 100 feet down, it went to negative 2. It's just boom, that quick.
Yeah, right. Well, that's
no
good.
Standard lapse right there.
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk with our guests tonight. They're from right now Nashville, Tennessee, Mr. Len and Rick from the Aviation Access Project. They're down in Nashville to see if ice is a problem down there, but also learn what they're up to. They're doing some really cool things in aviation. That
you want me to get them on the line?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring them on.
Okay, let's push that button.
All right.
Ooh,
let's see.
Like a familiar noise. It's ringing, right. One ringy dingy.
Let's see. They got some cool stuff going on. Yeah. We share a lot of the same views with aviation and all that.
Yeah, but they don't pick up. I'm gonna. I think we have Leonard on the line.
We do have Leonard on the line.
Leonard Asante, welcome to Simple Flight Radio.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate being here.
Yeah,
and you said we, so I assume your partner, Rick Matthews, is there?
That is correct. Rick is here. Hello, guys.
Hello. Hey. Right. So is our Atis right about Nashville? I don't know if you were listening.
We were listening. It's warm here, yes.
Nice. Kind of jealous about that, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I've been to Nashville just a couple times for business. I love that city. It's a great, great town.
Yeah, Nashville's a good town. I moved here in about, I want to say, 94, 95, something like that. And in those passing years, it has grown a lot, developed a lot, and it is really a happening place.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Last time I was down, I was actually there for an aviation conference in the college. I went down there. There was the Woman in Aviation Conference, which I attended. That was fun.
What?
Looking for a
co-pilot? Looking for a co-pilot? What are you doing at a Woman in Aviation?
You know what? It was good. There's a lot of guys that attend, but you know, who doesn't like women in aviation?
I love women in aviation. I just had this vision of you wearing a wig.
Yeah, get a new vision. Why don't you? But
yeah,
anyway,
me, I want to.
Yeah, right. Anyway, thanks guys for coming on the show tonight. We're really excited to have you and hear what you guys have got going on. And you're the head guys at the Aviation Project. And you want to tell us a little bit what
Aviation
that's
Access Project?
Or yeah, Aviation Access Project. Excuse me.
Yeah, you want to talk to us a little bit and introduce yourself to our guests. And what is the Aviation Access Project?
Oh, wow. I thought we didn't have to talk. I thought we were on the radio. Well, we'll let Rick go first with the introduction, and he's the founder of the project, so he can start us off, and then I'll tell you what I do, and we'll just right after him.
Excellent.
Alan, Mark, I want to, first of all, thank you guys for what you do, your service and your passion for this industry and what the service you're providing right now is very, very cool, very important, actually, as you help get the word out about innovations and other great ideas. And you're actually more influential than you think.
Uh-oh.
You are.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Let me get my wife on the line. I want her to hear this.
Yeah. You're going
everyone, listen carefully.
You're going to want to hear this. Here's how influential you guys are. Lynn and I have just decided that in the operations manual for the flight center that's still somewhat under development, we have decided to remove all references to the number 92.
The number 92?
What's that? Did I miss something? Whoosh, right over the head.
Well, it has something to do with your joke a while ago, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And we decided to throw around the word svelte quite a bit in the manual and in our lexicon, you know, like a svelte cockpit for lean operations, a clean
svelte
facility.
Airplane.
Yes.
And even somehow work the word into our call sign for air traffic control. You know,
we'll like that. Somehow I don't get to use svelte much during any part of my day and never thought it would come into play more with the aviation world.
See, now you're learning how influential you are.
Yeah. Well, and if it hadn't been for your weight goal, we would never have mentioned it.
Awesome.
So I defer to you.
You found a use for the word today, so it has just resonated nicely. So we thank you for your influence, positive influence on the industry. But
what are you going to do if I use the word plethora?
Don't get me started. We've got a place for that, too. Yes,
as we say at the project, we can manage that.
But you have to precede it with the word veritable. That's important.
Oh, you've my got goodness, to. Yeah.
It's got to be veritable plethora. There you
plethora.
Go.
And wow, I'm going to have to pull out.
I want
to
start writing this. You know what another word I want to use tonight? Bulbous.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we're going to. Well, we'll get the beep button for that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, before
we digress into something that we're sorry about, which may have already happened.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for letting us on, and we're excited to be able to share what we have learned, what we have begun to do, what we think is a very important development and towards the goal of improving the situation in aviation. We all know about the problem, so we're not going to dwell on that. Our colleague Adam Smith has been terrific at influencing us all to look at the positive side of where we're going, and that's exactly what we're doing. And so there are some terrific solutions that have been developed that are in place now and will increasingly be implemented as time goes on. The Aviation Access Project is the result of about 18 months worth of intense development work, trial and error, gut-wrenching, heart-searching, soul-searching types of solutions needed to fix the problems in this industry we're all so passionate about. It took a group of about a dozen aviation professionals over the course of a year, thanks to LinkedIn, by the way. That's how we found each other.
Awesome.
Just watching the activity and the traffic and all the various aviation groups and seeing the common threads worth of concerns, genuine concerns, that everybody wanted something desperately to come through and fix things. Well, we were all kind of dancing on those fringes ourselves, but it wasn't until the ALPA released their excellent report, I think it was a year ago last fall, on the Student Pilot Retention Initiative. And that was the wake-up call. That was the trigger mechanism, basically, that kicked this whole thing off and helped us solidify this effort into something that could be turned into something substantial. And in that report, amongst all the other excellent observations and conclusions it drew, the one glaring number that stands out and it just burned in all of our collective brains was the number 80, 80% dropout rate. Well, that's, you know, I don't know of any industry that can survive with that type of survivability, which means 20% actually make it through. And furthermore, we have learned that of those that do make it through and get their private ticket, a small percentage of those actually stay in. So I think it was 20% of those.
So 20% of 20%, you're saying?
That's right. So the numbers are undeniable, but the way we have approached this, based on our collective experiences and what all of us on our development team represent in our areas of expertise, we have come up with a five-component program called the Aviation Access Project that once, if all five of these components were implemented, we can pretty much solve most of the issues at the local level that the airports and the industry is experiencing now, while at the same time, and I'm just going to go ahead and make this bold proclamation right here, but we have learned, theoretically, that 80% dropout rate, it could be dropped to as low as 25%.
Nice.
if certain things are done and are implemented and followed up and supported properly. And so we're very excited to be able to coalesce this development into something that is now branded. We are based in Huntsville, Alabama. We have a terrific marketing and branding team there, in addition to a growing group of professionals that's going to help administer and monitor the progress as we open up flight centers across the U.S. These flight centers, Lynn will go into some more of that, but all of this has just come about in the last year or so. What I bring to this as one of the founding partners in it is my expertise in fractional ownership. I've got a long pedigree of fractional ownership development and pioneering various things. I was the NetJets, of course, was our inspiration for this. I simply wanted to adapt that business model for the rest of us down here at the grassroots level so that we could all have access to something. Just as well as they have been able to create access to jet travel for a lot more people. And later I became a founder of what ultimately became AirShares Elite, which is still out there and still is very successful, pioneering fractional ownership in small aircraft. And there's been a succession of other ventures and such that I've been involved in, primarily in the Atlanta area, all of which helped to gain experience and know-how, bringing forward all of this knowledge to today. Fractional ownership is at the core of what we're talking about doing here with Aviation Access, because we believe that most pilots and they start out wanting to get their pilot's license with the intent of owning something. We just believe that. So that's at the core, but other components that are circulating around the fractional ownership methodology of ownership helps to make the entire experience positive. It creates a demand. It creates longevity. It creates staying power, and it brings numbers, adds numbers to our industry. So that's just a summary level of what we're doing. I'm going to let Lynn answer a few questions and share some things. Lynn is our vice president of communications, so he is well versed in the heart of the matter and able to communicate very well what we're all about. But,
which, by the way, means I have a Skype account.
Let's code that. Yes.
So wait, I got to go back. Rick, you said a lot of stuff there, and first of all.
Rick. Says a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
How many hours do we have tonight?
Yeah, really. Maybe I can use that word plethora. But anyway, so Rick, you started AirShares Elite. Is that what you said?
That's correct. I was part of the original group of partners that formed AirShares Elite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Oh, that's
That is great. I just, you know, I was part of that program here in Chicago.
Okay.
So anyway, that's why.
That's a good program.
Yeah, I miss my SR-22. They aren't here anymore, but that was great. Anyway, I digress. I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but I heard that and saying, "Well, wait a minute, I was a part of that fractional program."
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I digress. Interesting note. We'll have to talk about that offline, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good. So Len has Len what? So your role in this as vice president is to help spread the good word, right?
That's what I do. I spread it. Yeah.
Cool.
I got involved with these guys through LinkedIn, like Rick said. We're big LinkedIn fans. If you haven't figured that
that's
out,
that's awesome.
Yet.
I think that's really great. There's all these little online communities of aviation enthusiasts, and that's cool that you guys got connected through LinkedIn. I think that kind of brings a little modern facelift to all this.
Yeah, I think actually it's a part of the model that we're trying to develop with the Aviation Access Project. This is going to be sort of a very 21st century social media integrated, you know, online community is part of where we're going. But I've been a pilot for 30 years now, but I'm a college professor is my day job, and I'm a professor of communication. And so that's where I kind of fit in this, and my area of expertise that I bring to the project's table is this, Rick mentioned, the 80% dropout rate. And I teach at a community college here near Nashville, and one of the things that we're very focused on is student success and student retention, and making sure they do well when they're with us, and making sure they stay with us. And so the argument I bring to the table is that the same strategies that we use at colleges across the country can work in the aviation training environment as well, that we can do some fairly simple things that really increase the chances of our students succeeding and staying involved with the program.
Well, that's outstanding. I think that's such an important aspect. I know Len, you and I had talked about this earlier on the phone a couple weeks ago, but you know that's so important. And student retention is just such a huge undertaking. But it's also, you know, that you know, going back to your guys' number 80, that's I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow within that.
Sure, not a lot of successful endeavors out there with an 80% dropout rate, unless you're, you know, in the military special forces or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, if 80% drop out and only 20% of those that remain in stay active in aviation long term, that's only 5 people out of every 100. And that's not the way to grow the industry. That's the way to shrink the industry, and we need to grow it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what are some of the things, the idea of fractional keeps coming up, and how would fractional ownership kind of keep student retention, you know, to increase student retention?
Well, Rick wants to answer this, so I'll let him go.
Oh, sure.
He's about to jump all over me. I want to say
the idea behind fractional ownership is really one simple thing, and that's skin in the game. It is our theory, based on our own personal collective experiences, that if I owned a share of something, or if I own something or a share of something that I learned to train in, I'm more likely to stay involved. And so that's the basis. That's really the philosophy behind this. Giving individuals that really want to learn to fly. In fact, what I'm honestly basing this on is that Joe Pilot wants to learn how to fly. He's made that decision. He gets off the couch, gets in the car, drives down Airport Road, and goes to the airport. The intention really is to own a plane. What he's thinking of is owning a plane for business utility, or family travel, or recreational purposes, something like that. And I'm making the presumption, guys, that we're not talking about a track for airline to go for the airline for the jobs and that. I'm talking about private aviation, private use. Now, it could apply to future commercial pilots. That's okay. But inherently, most people want to own something, but what's happened is that's been prevented because of the cost of access. The cost of entry has typically been high. So, you know, we know those numbers. It can cost from $40,000 to $50,000 to get a decent two-seat airplane, an old one. You know, then you got to refurbish it and such. And that's a couple of sports cars in a family's driveway right there on their own. What we've simply done is taken a page out of the NetJets book and adapted it to us, the rest of us, whereby for almost a credit card transaction that is under $10,000, you can now own a share of a nearly new or brand new light sport aircraft or any number of other type of planes and have a lot of access to this. You have a generous allocation and a share of a plane in a very well-managed professional environment, which is in the middle of a pilot community, a very friendly, warm place on the airport. The word is badly needed. The culture at this place that is supporting the sales of these shares and supporting the maintenance, it's a different kind of culture. It needs to be different because we need to attract new people to the industry. So the core of it is that ownership aspect, the ownership that we all kind of long for eventually. And we believe that that's strong enough to warrant making available shares of very desirable airplanes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm just wondering, you said the light sport, is it not specifically, but is it, I'm trying to think of the word, I guess, solely focused on that, or are you talking about other planes beyond that as well?
Light sport aircraft, we are interested in that only because of the category. The light sport industry is something that's incidental. It's out there, but we're interested in the category of two-seat airplanes. And here's why. Because we believe part of the cultural change that needs to be made for aviation to improve and increase the numbers and turn the dropout rate around is we need to consider not putting private pilot license as the first rung on the ladder. Right now it is. That is the first one. And it's a big rung. It's way up there. Why not put in place the sport pilot license as the first rung on the ladder using equity-based trainers? That, in other words, the new guy buys a share of his plane, and then he is taught to operate his airplane. He gets a sport pilot license as a result of that. That's built into the price of the share. So, therefore, there's not a huge big deal about flight training, per se. He has just bought an asset, and now, by the way, we're teaching him how to operate it. He's going to stay in. The likelihood of him becoming part of that statistic has now dropped dramatically, and he's more than likely going to stay in and then eventually, hopefully, move up to other aircraft later as his experience level improves. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Oh, absolutely. I think I like that for the skin in the game aspect. You know, just It really kind of reaffirms the invest, you know, the long haul in investment in aviation, because not is it just a financial investment. There's a time. It's almost there's also a lifestyle investment. So, you know, that's all part of it. I think that's really awesome.
Well, doesn't that also though mean that we've got to sell that lifestyle? We being the collective we in the industry of. It's not just about getting your license. It's about, like today, I got to see my son, my daughter-in-law, my granddaughter because of an airplane. If it hadn't been the airplane, we were thinking of driving. I thought that just doesn't make sense. I'm going to get to say hello and turn around and come home so I can do my radio show. 8 hours of driving for an hour or two, or it's an hour in the air each way, and have fun doing it.
Absolutely,
exactly. We have not been selling the lifestyle, which is what a lot of other industries do. I mean, you know, think about country clubs, golf clubs, boating, right? I mean, you know, you look at the commercials on TV and you see the advertisements, and you're not just buying a product; you're buying sort of an entree into a lifestyle, and you know, when I learned how to fly, and this is a very common sort of thing, you know, that thousands of people have gone through, you know, it was all about learning how to fly, but then after I got the private ticket, then what? Right? Then what?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Learning how to drive a car and then having to, you know, drive somewhere 20 minutes away and pay someone to rent the car just so you could drive around for an hour. It's not a good way it's not a good way to stay in the industry, and it doesn't promote what the industry can do.
Right.
So we're looking at you know, I guess it's a different way of marketing as well as a different way of selling and a different way of training. And the idea is invite you into a community of aviators, into a lifestyle that is not just fun, but also has serious practical utility.
Yeah.
Like the examples you just gave, right?
Absolutely.
And that gives people even more reason to stay in the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely correct. That, you know, changing the marketing issue, you know, aviation, in my opinion, has kind of been perceived as a luxury item. And, you know,
kind of?
Well, absolutely. I think it has been perceived as a luxury.
It has, absolutely.
But, and that's the lifestyle that is sold.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you know, the average guy like me and you, you know,
I don't think you're average.
You probably think I'm below average. Yeah,
darn it.
But yeah, no, I think that's very important, and I think the community aspect of it is just really great to build upon, to attract people in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So with the Aviation Access Project, beyond getting the airplane, right, and getting skin in the game, is there something with tied to the training? I'm not sure if you're saying there's a methodology here, or is it truly just to get the airplane, the skin in the game, and then turn it over to those that know how to teach in it?
So you're asking about flight instruction? How we take that part of things?
Yeah, I take a long way to get to this.
Yeah, how to educate people. Basically.
Yeah, so they bought in this plane. Are you the one that's devising the flight training curriculum?
Oh gosh, no, that wouldn't be a good idea. We've got one of the things that we think is true is that there's some great training materials out there, written materials. There's some great techniques out there. For example, a lot of the new simulator technologies that are becoming more and more common. Right? If you guys haven't checked into Redbird flight simulators, for example, those guys are doing some really cool stuff down in Texas.
Yes.
So we think the places are there. We think the pieces are out there. It's kind of our job to put them all together and provide them to the client. When I got my private license, I went through 4 flight instructors.
Wow.
And as a result, it took longer and cost more and was less fun than it otherwise would have been. So what we call the flight pro, kind of like the golf pro, the tennis pro, the flight pro, are flight instructors that we connect our clients with. And we try to find the best flight instructors we can, and we compensate them well for providing the flight instruction to our students. So the idea is that you're not going to go through 4 or more different flight instructors with a new guy every week. You're going to have a much more positive training experience in our flight centers, using our simulators, using good modern training techniques, and that'll help with the dropout rate as well. Excellent instruction goes a long way to solving a lot of our problems. And so one of the things we do is when we go into a new area, is we try to find those flight instructors who kind of buy into what we think, buy into what we're selling, really. And once they buy into that and we check them out and we find out to be really good instructors, then we invite them to be part of our team. So we're trying to make it an integrated, seamless opportunity for new for new pilots. And of course, if you're already a pilot and want to buy in, well, you can do that too. And then we provide transition training as opposed to primary training.
And is the Redbird or the any kind of simulator part of the fractional program as well?
Yes, we're going to include one of those. At the moment, we're looking at the Dream Flyer. Our colleague Tim Bush up in Iowa is a true advocate of the Dream Flyer. It's a relatively low-cost, full-motion simulator. So depending on what level of flight center that we establish at any given airport, and we won't go into that criteria right now, we want to be able to allow or facilitate a simulator of some kind. Now, granted, in some airports that are larger markets, when we are able to have a unique and distinctive facility, a flight-centered facility, something we actually call an eagle's nest, it's truly a pilot country club, more than likely we'll be able to have a dedicated room for a Redbird something. And that is just, that would just be icing on the cake, yes. But overall, we do believe in the value of additional simulator time to add to the training excellence, training experience to help that whole process along, cutting down on live cockpit time for just some of the mundane things. So, yes, simulators rank very heavily in the formula for this.
Absolutely. You know what's interesting that I had a conversation with some flight instructors who had been out of, you know, teaching for a couple of years. And I brought up the idea of simulators, and they said, "Oh," they immediately threw it out. And I think that there's a little bit of education that needs to go on with simulators and how advanced they are, how much money they can save for flight training,
right?
And what kind of training you can actually get out of a simulator. And you know, there's a couple other products that you can plug into these things to really make a real live scenario and so I think almost more effective. Then the training is more effective than just going up in the airplane.
Yeah, I agree. I know listening to some of the, if I can say, long-time instructors, to your point, I think they're, you know, nothing like the airplane. You can't duplicate the feeling in the cockpit, but I agree with you. You know, the ability to push the pause button, to reset and put yourself back into it, is just, it's a more relaxed feeling and yet very realistic, and then the ability to get the procedures down, I think, is just awesome. I love
exactly. It's a major component of modern training, and it also plays well into the student success and retention initiatives, because if you look at the model that Redbird uses in their instruction, is, you know, the student buys a package of training which includes a certain amount of simulator time, a certain amount of flight time, but the student is able to access the simulator any other time that they want when it's not being used to practice on their own.
Right.
And, you know, so the student is at the airport more, is involved with their training more, which means they're going to become more proficient more quickly, right, which increases their satisfaction level. Is one of the big things that turns students off or makes them less likely to succeed is if they can't see their progress towards their goal.
Right.
So the more time they're in the simulator and with their instructors, the more likely they are going to be able to see their progress, which keeps their morale up, which makes them more likely to succeed.
Well, and with the tools that go along with it, I'm not sure if you gentlemen listened to, I don't know if it was last week or the week before when we had Pilot Edge.
So
Pilot Edge is a tool.
Yeah.
Yo, you're familiar. And for our audience, our listeners' sake, it's essentially live ATC that integrates with your sim time so that you can give them emergencies. I mean, they're real people that are talking to you. It's a great, great asset, and I think it just enhances.
Makes you sweat in the simulator, yeah.
What's that?
So it's a great way to make you sweat in the simulator.
That's right. Well, and actually, I think Al makes them sweat because every time he goes up in his 747, he has engine failures.
Very common in the simulator environment. Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of students, one of their major issues is they do not like to talk to ATC.
Right.
Anything that gets people more comfortable working the radio and dealing with the people at the other end of the radio. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about me, but it's not my favorite thing about flying, but it's at the top five. I love talking to those guys on radio. I don't know, it's just a sense of accomplishment and feeling like you're one of the big guys, you know, flying a 747 Heavy.
Yeah, Thursday.
I love that.
On a quick,
you should get your own radio show.
I'll have to look into that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that, no, that's absolutely. I think that's great. You know, all these little tools and pieces can really, can really dramatically reduce reduce that 80%, and in, you know, which ultimately increases student
retention. What's interesting, and I don't know why this is just coming to me right now. It probably should have come to me weeks ago, but we have, you know, the Aviation Access Project today. We had Pilot Edge. We've had other organizations, and they all seem like wonderful pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So maybe that's kind of our goal in life, is to make sure that we help put the pieces together, because they're wonderful pieces, and they're going to be a lot of value for all the users of them. But I just want to make sure that we don't do anything that doesn't take us to our ultimate goal, right? Don't miss an opportunity.
Exactly, and that's why, you know, a lot of people are very pessimistic about the aviation industry. You know, we're losing pilots, it's so expensive, you know, rules and regulations, price of gas, all this stuff, bad economy, makes us think that, you know, this industry is doomed. But you can turn all that stuff around. Look at the other side of the coin, all the things that you just mentioned. Add in AOPA's initiatives, you know, add in everything EAA is doing. You know, I think you're right. I think all the pieces are out there, and if they come together in the right way, they can have the impact of dramatically changing the industry in a positive way. Because it all boils down to economies of scale. If we double the number of pilots out there, all of a sudden, everything else gets a little less expensive.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally believe that.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we all are.
Exactly. There's a silver lining in the clouds, I think. And it's just, like you said, putting all the pieces of the puzzle together and then moving forward together. And I think we can change an industry and for the positive. And bring a lot more people into it.
Well, we talked a little bit about old thinking, but it was our first show in August, which was my first show with Al. He had done one before that at Oshkosh. But we talked about that the industry tends to try and solve new problems in old ways. And I'm getting the sense with Adam, you mentioned Adam Smith's name. We didn't define who he is. Most people know him, but he's the new senior vice president of the Center for the Advancement of the Pilot Community at AOPA. And people like yourselves and some of our other guests, that, you know, we're recognizing they are new problems, new challenges that need new answers. And I think we got them. It's just a matter of putting it together.
You're exactly right. What we enjoy doing is just simply taking an entrepreneurial view and approach to the problem. So what others have been wringing their hands about as challenges and problems, we actually have seen them as opportunities. So and it's, you know, shucking the old way, basically, and being bold enough and have the courage to actually promote a different type of culture, because that's what's going to have to happen in order for these changes to occur, a difference in the culture totally. So, yeah, it's an entrepreneur approach. So that makes it fun. And, yes, it is profitable. It will definitely create some brand new business, levels of business and revenues. These flight centers are hybrid franchises that can be acquired by anybody at a local airport that is entrepreneurial and mind and has that passion. And we'd be delighted to speak to anybody at any small airport in the country who is interested in this. We have about 50 on a list right now, but we will never stop talking to people that are interested in this. These will be small businesses on each airport that generate new levels of business. They're compatible with the local FBOs, the local flight schools. They are complementary to existing operations and hopefully will add value to their operations. Again, we're bringing in an all-new level of business in addition to bringing out, hopefully, legions of ex-pilots, giving them new reasons to come out to the airport, and which we think there's millions of those guys out there.
Oh, yeah.
So there's opportunity everywhere we turn, guys. We ignore the cynics. We ignore the negatives. Yes, this industry can thrive. It just takes some progressive thinking on the part of some brave and some bold people, I guess, and willing to put up with some cynicism out there. But it is being done. I mean, it's being done now. We have launched, but we're early in the game, and we're very excited about proceeding as quickly as possible to as many airports as possible and get this show on the road.
Do you have any? I'm sorry if I missed that. Do you have any flight centers open?
There's a list of 50.
Oh, right? The 50 have started, or their first 50 are coming?
First 50 are coming. The list of 50 is a list of people at different airports around the country who've expressed a significant level of interest in being part of a local flight center. We actually have flight center number 001 is just getting off the ground right now. That's here in Gallatin, Tennessee at Sumner County Regional Airport, Mike 33, where we're working on selling our very first airplane. And then we've got flight center number 2 coming online, and flight center number 2 is?
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
No way!
All right.
I was just there today.
You know, Cedar Rapids is interesting for a couple of reasons. Our buddy Tim Bush, who's our colleague in the project, he's based at Cedar Rapids. You were just at Cedar Rapids. I bought my airplane at Cedar Rapids. So Iowa is kind of like a nexus for us.
I actually got my license in Iowa City in 1976, so I've always talked about how Iowa City is my favorite airport. I worked there as a college student, and my son, actually both my kids were down there, and now my oldest has moved up to Cedar Rapids, so I don't have the opportunity as much to go to Iowa City, so Cedar Rapids is now becoming a very favorite place of mine.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice airport. I like it there, actually.
Yeah.
I think I flew for Iowa City on the way back, on the way home from picking up my airplane.
Yeah, awesome. So there's this is really exciting. I think that the value that's provided, I've thought a lot about this, these little clubs and, these little communities, they're actually very, good economic boosters for an airport. You know, you have airplanes, pilots, and airports, right? And each one of those has some economic effect. And I look at more at our flying club, the Leading Edge Flying Club, and we provide value to an FBO, but we also provide value to our membership with the small fuel discount and hangar rent and things like that. So I think
our owners,
and the owners. So I think that what you guys are doing is spot on. It's just that's such a wonderful concept, and it's so mismanaged by airport authorities and the current connotation of aviation.
We like to bring some sensibility to that right there, and that's a very good point that you make. And it's a mismatch of all kinds of cultures, expectations, politics, you name it, and every airport has every public use airport, that is. And so we simply want to be a good neighbor, and without getting involved in whatever all the local machinations are, because we want to bring economic prosperity to the airport. You just referenced economic impact. That is always on our mind, and we look forward to a point where we are mature with a 4 or 5 airplane fleet and start measuring the true economic impact of a flight center based on that new level of business that we bring to that airfield that otherwise would not have had it not been for our presence there. So as you can imagine, as we look at this nationwide on a large scale, we have to kind of catch ourselves sometimes. It's hard to get our hands around the true impact of what this could really do. So we're just going to focus one at a time in true franchise, hybrid, entrepreneurial, free enterprise fashion, and just make sure that we do the very best we can, incorporating all the wishes, hopes, and desires of many, many people who have just hoped for some real improvements in this industry.
Yeah.
I don't mean.
Yeah, and one thing, we're getting a lot of momentum behind the idea of flying clubs, again, not only thanks to people like Adam Smith and the AOPA, but it's been really building. But I also mentioned I was part of a fractional program, and I was thinking, how do I get those two things married together? So what about flying clubs where they want to get an airplane, maybe an equity-based flying club? Is there a way to combine the two, this idea of fractional ownership and the flying club?
Yes, that's the good news. In fact, not only is it possible to have an equity-based flying club, But it is possible. We've already looked into this as far as adapting our flight center model so that we could even adopt or create or support, resurrect, what have you, whatever the local need is. We would like to have a flying club adjunct. Now, this would favor very nicely with in the halls of AOPA. This is our way of supporting Adam and the rest of the staff that is charged now with promoting flying clubs. We think that's a terrific idea. President Craig Fuller, of course, with AOPA, is a huge advocate of pilot community and increasing that, if you know, as we have been reading lately. Well, the good news there is we've already planned to implement that very thing. That's the nature of a flight center, is to be the community, the hub from which all of these activities come out of. Share sales, maintain the airplane, camaraderie, just everything that goes on at a single location for simplicity purposes. So we're proud to be able to be the boots on the ground, so to speak, so that we can implement those desires that the folks at AOPA have been interested in too. So we're looking forward to a lot of cooperation, very compatible, we think, our business desires. Flying club right next to a flight center as an adjunct. Everybody's still enjoying the same facilities. We're a part of the same community and a community of celebration, celebrating each other's advancements and whatnot. It's just a natural flow, we feel like. It just has to be done.
Absolutely. I've got the biggest smile on my face right now.
I was just going to say, you look like you have the biggest smile on your face right now.
It has to do with that 92 thing, I bet.
What's that?
It has to do with what?
The 92 thing, I'm sure.
Yeah. I got a long way to get there. But
yeah. But no, you do always maintain a smile after you hear one of my jokes.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely.
Yeah. Either that or it's gas. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of the two.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, but I do. I genuinely have a really big smile on my face just based on what you've been saying. It's such a, it's such a need for that type of thing, promoting people's achievements and helping people through. I just recently had a student that passed his private pilot check ride.
Yay.
And,
yeah.
And
hey, first one?
What's that?
Your first one?
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. Yes. After 10 years of instructing, yeah. Finally. No, I had a, but anyway, this my student, he sent out a really nice note to the flying club afterwards and said, hey, you know what? You know, if it wasn't for this flying club, I probably would have dropped out.
That was a good note.
There was just such a huge, massive support network. We need these pockets of support networks all over the place to really keep people in. I mean, that's the biggest part of it. That was somebody who was going to drop out, forgo their aviation dream, their life dream, and, you know, just let it kind of drift away downriver. Never accomplish it. That's really sad to me.
No, it absolutely is.
The celebration aspect is something that is totally missing. When I got my private license back in 1980, after working on this for years and years and multiple instructors and thousands of dollars worth of washing planes and mowing lawns more than I needed to, I got my check ride and I went back to my dorm at Middle Tennessee State University to nothing. It was just me. It was just another day, but it was the happiest day of my life. Imagine, if you will, a time when somebody comes back in from after having done their first solo, they're taxiing back up into the grass in front of a beautiful flight center type of thing, and as they pull into the parking area, there is a line of people outside waving signs, waving, there may be flags, they're clapping, they're applauding this person coming in because he just made his first solo, or he passed a check ride. He gets out of the airplane, and there's a celebration. Folks, that's what we're talking about doing here. We think these achievements of learning to fly a heavier-than-air aircraft and learning how to control in three dimensions and being able to do all this, have fun doing it, and being safe, these things are to be celebrated. These are major life accomplishments, and we should be doing these things now, but we don't. Yeah, there's just that formality, you know, of cutting the shirt tail off and all that, and you know, people can talk about that. I had my cut. But I think there's so much more we can do to add value and purpose to life, meaning to life, excitement, just by genuinely being excited about each other's accomplishments. And that can really only be accomplished by having a single focal point on an airport that promotes these kind of things, a pilot community, and that's exactly what we're designing into the Flight Center.
Yeah, I'm fond of saying that community is made up of two root words, common unity, which of course is all the things that bind us together. And when you get that going, it's the momentum and the energy level is just awesome.
Exactly, and that's where some of our social media strategy comes in. We want to get to the point where every airplane we've got is equipped with one of those high-definition mini video cameras.
GoPro.
GoPro.
Yes. Or I shouldn't just do the, what's the other one? N-Flight, I think it is.
N-Flight, right. It'll be equal in your... but anyway, record those. Put a little video on our YouTube channel. Post a video on our Facebook page. You know, celebrate that.
Spark reel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we plan to make use of all of that to help build a sense of community and also, you know, to help spread the word about what we're doing. And, you know, it's sort of the modern version of the shirt tail, and I'm so passionate about this because I never got my shirt cut, you know.
I never did either. What's with that?
Yeah.
Of course, maybe I don't think I was wearing a shirt at the time, so maybe that was it.
Wow.
Okay.
All right, let's not go there. My brain is going to a few places. I'm thinking, you know what, Mark, better stop while you're behind.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, yeah. No, I think that's the cool part about this, and aviation is a thing that that's hard. Up till now, it's been a really difficult thing to share. Right, because it has been a very difficult thing to share because you know you can't really, you know until now we have mobile or you know digital cameras on our phones and videos and things like that, GoPros and media outlets such as Facebook and YouTube to post all this stuff, and you know each day I look at. You know, the new content that's been posted and new flying videos. There's a lot out there, and it's all really cool stuff to see. You can watch guys fly gliders in the Swiss Alps, you know, and you can learn and see and really enjoy just probably almost as much as the guy flying it.
Absolutely. You know, I think about the, I mentioned a few weeks back about seeing these videos and Lennon, and Rick were just kind of referring to it as well. These people, when they did their first solo, the smile that comes on their face when they rotate and they're up about 500 feet and you just start to see, holy crap, boop. I just did.
Exactly.
And then to see it today, too, here I am taking off out of Cedar Rapids and my wife, just to see that smile on her face when we broke through the top of the cloud deck, it was like, this is really cool, and I was wishing I had that camera. I kept on thinking, we got to install one of those permanently.
Yeah.
Because how much of the world has never seen that? It is just the coolest thing, and then to be pilot in command of that was even
exactly.
Better.
To me, that's always been the...
I'm going back up. I'll be right back.
To me, that moment of leaving the ground when you're just still in ground effect... To me, that's always the moment for me whenever I fly. Just that moment where you're literally taking flight. That's always the most special time for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when you're in the airliners and all that, you look out on the wings and then you just start to see the wings curl up and you're like, oh, here we go. You know, it's awesome. Yeah. So anyway, so this is quite an exciting time for you guys and all that. What I'm kind of curious about the light sport airplane. Is there any particular light sport aircraft you have an eye on?
Oh yeah.
That's a good answer.
We say that for those that might know this. So there's only 100 and something manufacturers out there. So it took a while for our team to sort and sift through them. But we've got a couple of finalists that we really, really like. And is it okay, Lynn, if we tell everybody the number one choice?
I think so. Without
Wow, you heard it here first, folks.
We're not promoting, I guess. We're you know, I promised you guys a couple of exclusives tonight, and so I suppose, you know, here's one of them.
Well, our number one choice, and this is where we have already begun looking into some advanced production orders for, is something called the Bristell. For those of you that don't know the Bristell, if you do remember the Piper Sport, it was Milan Bristell designed NG3, as in next generation. This is the NG5. It's a follow-on generation from the old Piper Sport, also called the Sport Cruiser. The Bristell is something that we have found that overall, given all of its characteristics, numbers, the payload, the performance, the cost, the looks, it's more likely to sell itself, guys, than anything else. We don't want to sell airplanes or sell shares. We want it to sell themselves because pilots have already decided they want to own an airplane. So for us, it's just simply pointing them the way and making it as easy as possible. We think the Bristell represents all the good things that light sport has to offer, especially good looks. That's usually number one on a guy's list. He may not admit that because of ego, but it's true. Looks, am I correct about that? Looks is more important.
As my hairline has started to recede, I can attest to that. Yes, looks do matter.
Absolutely. You know, and I don't mean to interrupt, but at the same time, when you started talking, I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the Piper Sport was still around, because that was always my favorite.
Well,
there you go.
You're going to be glad to know that the legacy of the Piper Sport does continue, and that's what we have selected, at least for the low-wing model, okay? We would like an offer a high-wing, too, and there's some finalists there, and we'll just kind of let that slide for the moment. But we are looking forward to Bristell and in increasing numbers, so large numbers. So we're looking forward to that, and that will help. You know, again, this is not to support the LSA industry. We're looking at this from a category point of view, to bring hundreds of thousands of new people into the industry, turn them into licensed pilots, and then they're in the industry. They'll move up into the follow-on airplanes. You know, we'll have legions of Grumman Tigers and Cessnas and Pipers and the other four-place airplanes. We'll have those, too, at these flight centers, including high-performance airplanes. And who knows? We haven't put a limit on this as far up as it'll go. We can't get our hands around it because it is so vast. The opportunities are so vast.
Right. Absolutely. No, I think that's
so. Good. But what, you know, at the kernel of it, I guess you could say, is what's different. You know, you look at an Air Shares or Ascension Air. Mm-hmm. There's the SR-22,
yes.
Plane Smart down in Dallas, and maybe they're all wildly successful. But my sense is they haven't, excuse the pun, taken off.
Right.
And is it because it is light sport, because it is a lower cost of ownership? Is it because of a tie-in to getting a license? What makes this different?
All of that plus one more thing.
I'm
simplicity.
Listening. Simplicity.
One of the Simple issues flight. That we have seen is that it's often a difficult proposition to figure out exactly how much some of these options cost. For example, with some programs, you're going to have the upfront share cost, or an initiation fee of some kind, or a monthly maintenance fee, plus a per hourly fee, and that per hour fee depends on how many hours and all this kind of stuff, plus there might be other maintenance issues and whatnot. So one of the things we've tried to do is we tried to simplify the process. You pay one upfront share price, and that buys you a piece of the airplane. That's yours. Okay. And then we charge a monthly maintenance fee, and that takes care of everything. Everything except gas. You buy your own gas. And there's no per hour fee. You fly, you get a certain number of flight hours per year free included in your upfront cost. And so you do not have to worry about that additional per hourly fee or any other special assessment. It's a monthly maintenance fee which covers everything, including hangar, insurance, maintenance, and so on, plus your upfront cost, which buys you a piece of the airplane, and that is it.
Nice.
Wow, yeah, like that.
Yes.
Because then you guys don't have to worry about rising fuel costs that cut into you, and then it also allows a pilot to either fly in a way that saves him money or not in terms of, you know, Richard Peak, Lena Peak, whatever the decision is and how they fly the plane. And that puts that on the pilot rather than on the fractional program.
Exactly. And we also work with each individual air share owner to develop a share that suits their needs. You know, we can sell everything from a 1/16th of a share to a 1/8, which we think is going to be the most common. Even a quarter or a half a share of an airplane if you want that much. And with the larger share you buy, the more hours you get. So there's some flexibility that we can determine on the front end what type of use you're going to have for the airplane and, you know, sell the appropriate share to you. And if your needs change over time, we can adjust upward if we have to.
Any plans to take advantage of some of the other LSAs like the Icon A5, the Amphibious, or...
Don't get started on the Icon.
I'm in love with that plane, too. I admit it.
Hey, the answer is yes. Yes. We can fractionalize anything, guys. If a group of pilots came up to us and wanted us to simply manage their partnership in a Mooney, we can do that. We can LLC literally anything. I have a glass of water right here. I can LLC this water and put partners in it and manage this glass of water. We'll do that too. So that's the other cool thing about the flexibility of an LLC and a local management team, i.e. the flight center, that'll do that. So whether it's a group coming to us to manage their partnership or it's a partnership that we initiate to satisfy a demand of local newcomers, we can do that. The answer is yes to all of those things.
Wow. That's awesome. That is awesome. So, you know,
if you don't mind, I'd like to answer part B, the second part to the question that one of y'all just asked about how are we different.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned AirShares Elite. There's a very important distinction, and I think this might be behind your question. Yes, there are excellent companies like those guys out there. They're performing very well at certain levels, way up in the niche market. They typically appeal to certain wage earners or high net worth individuals. The AirShares Elite model, I think, may appeal to, you know, the top 5th percentile or whatever. So what we are representing, as far as we know, we are the only initiative in the entire nation that has taken a serious, comprehensive approach to the problem from the ground up, from zero, from someone getting off the couch and coming to the airport. From that point, we put him in a light sport aircraft, give him a sport ticket. It's all inclusive. Suddenly, we have created an infrastructure from the ground all the way up to, and I don't even know what kind of word I'm allowed to use here, but I can tell you that below the jets, the jet level is very highly organized. Below the jet level, it's wide open and very loose. So, again, we can't put our hands around how far we can go, but I do know that instead of chasing pockets of opportunity here and there, we simply want to build a complete and comprehensive network from the ground up and just see where this takes us. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely it does.
Yeah, I think you can definitely tell that, you know, everything below the jets is like I don't want to say tangled mess, but you know, it's kind of like a wild frontier.
Fragmented.
Yeah,
is
exactly. Yeah, that's a fragment. That's perfect. You know, and I think that providing some organization, you give people, for lack of a better word here, some direction, right? Mm-hmm. And how to operate and boundaries and how to operate, which, you know, that's I think that ultimately helps a retention rate, you know.
Yes.
Because it's a lot more structured.
Simple structure. Simple. Yes.
Exactly.
Simple flight.
Exactly. You know, it's hard, and for some reason we make it harder than it should to get started in this industry.
Yes.
You walk in, you guys ever hear of the FBO stare, the alien stare?
Yes.
You walk into an FBO and people look at you, it's like, who are you? You know, we don't recognize you, especially post 9/11 with all this increased security, right?
Yep.
You know, so it's not particularly easy for a new person to get involved.
No.
And we want to improve that experience.
Yeah, we talked about it a few weeks ago. I don't even know, maybe it was more than that, about the inside the fence and outside the fence people.
Yeah.
And that it's tough for those outside the fence people that want to be part of the community to know how to get access and become one of the members of the community.
Right, absolutely. No, and I think
or they think it's way more expensive than it really could be.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. You know, it's our responsibility as those who exist within aviation already today to help capture those people and bring them on the onto the other side of the fence, bring them onto the field, and let them enjoy.
Yeah. So you've mentioned, you know, one's getting started here very shortly, 50 on the first list. What kind of timeline are we looking to see maybe this 50 or 100 or 25? Do you have any?
Yeah, we're working diligently to get that plan out. I think we can look forward to several dozen of them throughout the first 6 months of next year. By the time Sebring rolls around, we will be attending Sebring in Sebring Forward in mid-January. We're expecting to make some major announcements at a press reception that we're going to be hosting down there so we can allow the media to get a better understanding of our intentions and such. We'll have some hard numbers and schedules, production orders, and plans like that we're going to be very pleased to announce. So, yes, we are early stage. We could have waited 6 months or another year or so before we met with you guys and whatnot, but you know what? You know, everything starts. Everything that has ever existed started somewhere. So we're simply early stage. We're excited about it. We have no doubt that this is going to go extremely well, and we're inviting anybody that wants to become a partner or an owner or a local director or any staff member. There's many different levels of participation in this. We'll need the participation and support of a lot of people because the pie is big enough for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we're open to new thoughts, ideas to keep this improved as we go, and it's just a terrific thing to be associated with some amazing people already who have helped design this. I'm hoping that you guys can meet some of the other folks on the team as we go.
Yeah,
love to do that.
Absolutely. So, I just sent out a tweet asking the Twitter sphere if anybody wants to help set up a handful of flight centers with me.
Oh my God, he's got that glint in his eye. Be careful.
Yeah.
Be very afraid.
No, there's nothing to be afraid about.
I'm kidding.
We have been live tweeting during the show. So if you look at the hashtag Simple Flight, you'll see some of our thoughts that we've had over the last hour.
Yeah.
Pushing you guys a little bit too.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate that. So, and now I lost my chair. See, you knocked me off my chair there.
Yeah.
For people that want more information, where do they go? How do they find out more?
There are a couple options. We've got some old technology. We've got a phone number.
Yeah. Okay, hey. I guess I got to go out and buy a phone.
Phone number. And it is area code 256-705-3504.
256-705-3504.
You betcha.
We'll post that. And what's the more current technology way to get?
We've got the website, of course, www.aviationaccessproject.com. There's not much there right now, but actually, as we speak, that is being developed. And, of course, I think we have the Facebook page.
Yeah, that's pretty active. You guys are very active on that. I like that.
A pretty active Facebook page. We try to keep up with that, yep. And then, of course, we have an email address, too, and that's just info@aviationaccessproject.com.
Got it.
Very cool.
We'll post this.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll post it, and we'll... and everything like that, provide all the appropriate links and all that. I hope you guys don't mind if we share some future updates as you guys progress with our listeners. I think you guys are doing something that's just absolutely needed and great, and you know, it's going to provide a lot of health to the industry, and it's something that's something to be really excited about. And you could definitely hear the excitement and the passion coming out of your guys' voice right now. I think it's just it's absolutely great.
We really believe in it. We do. I mean, it's you know, we all have other jobs, day jobs, whatever. But you know, the passion for this, the passion for growing aviation. Well, you guys know about aviation, man. Once it's in your blood, it's in your blood. It's hard to get it out.
Yeah,
we were at a flying club yesterday up in Madison. You might have heard at the beginning of the show. And we described how we have webcams in the hangar, webcams outside the hangar, and the things we're doing. And what was the comment? Like, you guys need to get off your medicine or something like that, or get on some medicine. So we think we outdid ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I always say if there's a Betty Ford Clinic for aviation, you know, I'd be the first. Well, people would probably, at least my family or parents and sister would tell me, be the first ones to intervene and throw me into aviation rehab.
Yeah, it might be a cool kind of club.
I don't want to go, trust me.
Yes, cool club. Yeah. But, you know, it takes passion. It takes passion to start a new initiative from the ground up. It takes passion to spread the word about aviation. You know, it's a good if more people will want to get involved if they see how much people who are involved love it.
Yeah,
so you know, we can self-promote ourselves all day long, but really every time we promote ourselves, hopefully what we're doing is we're promoting our industry.
Yes.
And the more people who see how much we love it, the more people are going to want to get on the other side of that fence.
Right, and that actually takes me back to something I did blog about, which started this idea or this conversation inside and the outside. I just stopped at one of those observation areas probably in August, maybe September, and there was a father with three kids just watching airplanes, and I brought them in, had them sit in the airplane, and again, they didn't know how to get inside the fence, and here I just happened to stop by, bring it in. It was, to me, it was a very life-changing experience because I said, you know what, I'm always talking to the same people here, now I can reach out and talk to people that would like to be part of the team, and now they felt like it, and who knows, maybe I helped develop three pilots in the future.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. There's what, about 600,000 pilots on the FAA registry in the United States?
Yes.
If every one of those people did one of what you just did, we could double our numbers overnight.
That's awesome.
Let's do it.
One.
Yeah.
Starting now.
Let's do it.
All right.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys, and what you guys are doing is incredibly cool, very worthwhile, and it's just downright fun and exciting.
So yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much for doing that, and it's gonna be a pleasure watching you guys grow.
Well, thank you once again for letting us be on it. And again, we thank you for what you guys do yourself. And we're all going to work on our sveltness.
92 times.
Prove many different sides of us, if you know what I mean. So we've got a lot of good things to look forward to, don't we, guys?
We do indeed. And we're looking forward to it as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thanks, guys. Hope you guys have a great night and
a good week.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see you soon.
All
very
right.
Good.
Bye bye, guys.
Bye bye.
Bye. Awesome.
That was awesome. And we didn't say their name much, just again for everyone. That was Len Asante and Rick Matthews of the Aviation Access Project.
Yeah. And they're you could just hear the passion and the excitement in their voice. I think that's the one thing that's really cool about doing the show is that, hey, even though we're Skyping with people and trying to connect and learn more, you can hear it.
Week in and week out. It's no different.
Yeah.
You know, and it's 8 to 10 p.m. on Sunday nights, and you wonder, gosh, who's going to get up? And we've got people from the East Coast coming on. They don't care because we all, well, you know, we love doing this. We love talking about it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. We have people that just drop in randomly. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. I mean, sometimes they're, like, dressed up with three-piece suits and dresses and things.
I love it. Yeah,
of course. Now you got to explain that kind.
Yeah, we have a live studio audience that walked in about 25-30 minutes ago, and it looks like you guys are coming from a Christmas party, weren't you? Yeah, so all dressed up and
I feel like a schlub.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like totally underdressed now, but
yeah,
it's
my suit jacket.
It's awesome. It's great. So if you're ever in the area, swing by and plug in a headset and
yeah, we're gonna have to have more headsets. I feel bad. We only you're just she's
nice.
Playing a game. Yeah. You know, you can listen to us on Shoutcast there too, or whatever, or just simpleflight.net.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great. I absolutely love it.
Now we don't have a microphone for you, so he shrugs his shoulders. He just wants to be part of
the
community.
That's great. I think that's wonderful. Yeah, but so they had a you know, there's just a lot of excitement, as we said. People are,
yeah.
I think, you know, there's a lot to be said about people's passions, and you know that aviation is a strong place to be, and it'll be a very exciting place to be.
You know, to me, I don't know if it's just now my perspective of doing this show, But my view of the industry over the last 3 months, I've seen a 180-degree shift.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? I mean, the energy and the positive feeling, and maybe it's just because we're surrounding ourselves by people that have a positive view, but I just see opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to make this place, this industry, so much better. And people are saying, we're going to do it, and they are doing it.
Absolutely. Well, very good. I think we've got some exciting updates. We'll bring those up in our recap show.
Yeah, next couple weeks over the holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do some reflection and some looking forward.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it's one of my favorite times of the week.
Let me guess.
What?
Hangar talk?
Yes!
Yeah!
You nailed it. You nailed it.
You know what? It only takes me about 3 months to finally figure it out.
Absolutely. But you know what? Today I had, so on my flight down to Champaign, I had I got a text message from one of the first.
Keep going. I just thought of something funny you're going to nail me on.
Oh, gosh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I feel like I'm going to get T-boned right now.
You're going to T-bone me. Do you want me to hold off until you finish your train of thought?
Just throw it out here.
So what happened on the radio today?
Yes, you stole my frequency change.
Well, go contact Chicago Center 133, and it was 2955 Tango, and I was flying 825 Alpha Kilo, but I was thinking, because I was planning and hoping to go in 2955 Tango, so he called you, I answered, and I'm thinking, why am I going to Chicago Center? I should be going to, if anything, Rockford Approach. And that's when it hit me. I got half out, and I went, oop, sorry, that wasn't for me. And I thought, oh, Al is just going to break my...
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tonight. And that's thank you for not mentioning it until I brought it up.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I'm going to find a good song to play during that, because there's something that's really, like, you come and get it. But they had a... But anyway, we had a... Well, we're down in Champaign. We ended up... I got a text message from a friend, and he said, why haven't you written a blog in about a month? I'm like, oh, good point. And he said, you know what you should do is talk about airplanes being used for the holidays. And I said, awesome. I know exactly what I'm going to write about. Because I realized is that, hey, we were using an airplane for the holidays down in Champaign. We went to go pick up the gentleman's daughter and the daughter's roommate from college to bring them home for the holidays.
Yeah,
and it's such a cool utility thing. It's a piece of equipment, the best minivan that you could possibly have on a college campus. And
then my trip today was just to take some presents for the holidays.
I wanted to get a picture of you with all your presents walking around the hangar today. It was great.
Did you see the present I brought back for the club?
No, I didn't. What'd you bring back?
I brought back a TV for our clubhouse.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. A little flat panel go on the wall up there.
Modern and fresh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, but I've always said that the thing that really helps me expand aviation within my family is because it brings my family to me.
Yeah.
And therefore, someone like my wife, who isn't, like I said earlier, an enthusiastic flyer, if I went to see the kids without her, she'd say, why didn't you ask me?
Yeah.
Right? So she doesn't care about getting there as much as being there. And I'm the one that likes both parts of that.
Yeah.
Oh, great. We're against the wind. We get to be up here longer. Right? She doesn't get that kind of thinking.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I think that's great, you know, because you have, these airplanes have different meanings, and I think it's pretty neat to understand them and how essential they are for holiday seasons and things like that.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question for you.
What's that?
Okay, so we've talked for years, as all instructors talk to us about, is breaking the chain of events, or the chain, if you will, of an impending accident.
The right? Swiss cheese model.
What is this? See, I haven't heard this. Talk to me about the
Swiss cheese model. It's a. It's all the. Think about Swiss cheese.
Holes in it.
And there's all these random holes, but when all these random holes just line up perfectly, not good things happen.
Got it. So I've always been one that looks at accidents and how do I learn from this. So I have a question for you, because I think I mentioned earlier when we started the show that, to me, things were going very negatively this morning.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't have an airplane all of a sudden. My ride that I had arranged for to take me out to Cedar Rapids wasn't, the timing may not work out. Finally got access to an airplane, drove out to the airport. My car battery, the cable somehow separated, and the car just died in the middle of the road. I couldn't get to the airport. Time was clicking away. I got to the airport. Now the airplane that I had was given permission to fly was locked, and the keys were inside.
Yeah.
So I had to call one of the owners. The owner had to drive. And meanwhile, my wife and I are not talking about it, but individually we're thinking maybe we're not meant to go.
Yeah.
So my question to you as a CFI is, was that something I should have said, okay, there's a lot of negative things going on here and not gone? Or did I do the right thing and just saying, screw it, I'm going because I want to see my family?
Well, I think what you just described there was get their itis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I admit that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, to say, screw it, I'm going, no pilot should ever say that. But I think you got to sit back and you got to realize that the time frame that that you're on, you know, this eight, you have to be flexible when doing these types of things and, you know, not be rushed or not, you know, just know that, hey, it's going to take as long as it takes. We're going to do it right. And when you start to feel that, you have to consciously be aware of it and start slowing yourself down.
And I think I did in terms of, okay, I'm not going to get there at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's more like noon.
Right.
And I'll have to turn around a little bit earlier because I've got the show. So I wasn't worried about the time, maybe a little bit, but more of this concept. It was almost as if I was saying to myself, is there a karma going on here and I shouldn't fly? It was IFR, it was cold temperatures, you know, zero Celsius, minus one. I was going to be in the clouds in a non-Fiki airplane.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to fly the license I earn, as you and I have always talked.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't want to put myself or my family in a risk situation. And I ultimately decided, okay, Mark, you can still make this flight safely.
Right.
But I suspect everyone that's ever had an accident has started off saying they're going to make this flight safely.
Right, absolutely.
So that's why I wanted to get your opinion. If you had been me, based on what I've described, if you would have canceled or done something different.
Well, I think you just got to slow down and take time. You know, mm-hmm. I think I don't know, I feel that I can feel myself start to get rushed quite a bit. And once I start feeling that, it's just like, you know what? I'm just going to sit down, relax, and enjoy this. I'm enjoy being out at the airport. I'm here. You know, that's the beauty that you said, that you like both things of going to see your family and the journey of getting there. So
yep.
Once you're at the airport, hey, you know, you're the time clock started, and, you know, it's time to start enjoying.
Yeah, and I looked at you at the ramp, and you were having some issues potentially getting started, and I'm thinking, boy, this just isn't a day for anyone. And then one of our other club members came in, and the weather wasn't quite right, so we had all these planes like ready to go, but they were all had
there's
issues, and so it wasn't just me, if
right.
you will.
No, absolutely. But one thing that I yesterday, to be honest, so I have, you know, dealing with icing conditions and things like that. I've reflected on a lot of this, and you know, you can flying for the airlines for 4 years, you always went, you know, regardless of really the icing, severe ice, you wouldn't go. You don't really have an option, you just go, and you have the ice protection to deal with it,
right?
Hot wings and really heavy duty
hot wings. I get those over at Hooters, right?
Yeah, exactly. But then also you punch through things, so you have options to get in and out of icing.
Sure.
You can operate on all different different altitudes where icing doesn't exist, so you have options. So today, or this weekend, was a really good exposure for me. I realized, you know what, I do have experience in ice, but I don't really have experience in, you know, general aviation airplanes and walking the line of icing conditions, right? And the FAA has put out their, you know, interpretation letter a couple of years ago,
right?
And which is, I'm glad that they did, because I can't believe it's actually their interpretation on all of this ice and everything is, it's more liberal than what I think people originally thought, which I think is good. But you know, you have to have a good working knowledge of the weather, your outs, and you know, performance of your airplane, things like that. So this is kind of, it was a great exposure this weekend, flying up to Madison and then down to Champaign today, and dabbling with ice, and not necessarily dabbling with it, but knowing where the margins are and how to negotiate.
And
that.
Dabble, I think, is an appropriate word. You know, I think I mentioned to you sometime over this last week when I got my instrument rating, I did it at the hybrid solution. I did one of those 10 days where they flew in a 15,000-hour pilot to spend a week with, or 10 days with me.
Right.
And then I continued it on after that just because I wanted to be more comfortable with what I learned. But the one thing that first instructor told me that I'll never forget, I told him I was afraid of ice. And he says, you can't be afraid of ice. You shouldn't. I said, what are you talking about? Ice can kill you. He said, I didn't tell you you shouldn't respect it, but don't be afraid of it. You need to respect it.
Yeah.
And that change my viewpoint about a lot of things, that the difference between respect and good decision making versus just fear.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the big issue. You know, a lot of people, when we showed up yesterday, we were going to fly up to Madison, I was going to throw out the idea of maybe, hey, you know, our margins are too thin, let's not go.
Right.
And you know, I'm always for flying the license that you have, but you know, I realize, hey, I don't have the experience in general aviation, and staying, not being able to climb up out of an icing layer or things like that. So really understanding where the ice exists and things, and you know, having that respect for it. You know, I'm still developing my respect for it, which is cool.
I think you should have come in and said, we're all going in the King Air.
That would have been nice.
Oh my God, that would be a dream item.
Yeah.
I've got to figure out, maybe from your boss, just tell me how much I have to pay and I'll pay
for
an hour.
Let's win the Powerball and buy our own.
You know, did I tell you that I matched three numbers on that Powerball?
I think you did.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, normally I match zero. So to get three, it was like $7, but I don't care. I matched three numbers.
Yeah, that's something to be proud of.
Well, I don't know about proud. That's something to be have fun with.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So what do you got planned for this week?
Well, for aviation-wise...
I'm not interested in anything else.
Yeah, right. tomorrow, we're going to fly with a student, and he has a house in Phoenix, and we're going to fly his SR-20 all the way out to Phoenix, work on his instrument rating, and then maybe even go out to L.A. and then fly back.
That is really cool. It's like that old Great Western Adventure they used to do out of Moray Field in Middleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like that. I think that's a great way of learning. You know, this very practical. This is a trip that a student's going to be planning on taking fairly regularly. So you know, what a great way of doing it.
Absolutely.
And seeing new terrain, having a lot of fun, and you know, knocking out a good chunk of training.
Yeah, that's just awesome. As a matter of fact, one of my first blogs I read was from this guy that took that 10-day Great Western Adventure out of Middleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And all the way, just shooting approaches and mountain flying and all that, went to NoCal and SoCal and then back and then got his instrument rating. I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Absolutely.
What a great idea.
I'm excited about it. I think it's I've got some things I want to try as an instructor and see, you know, how effective I can be on a trip like this. It's going to be pretty intense for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of, this will be a lot of teaching, you know, just compacted all into one, you know, two or three day stint, and it's...
Two or three days, that's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. So it's going to be kind of a marathon, but it's going to be a lot of fun and all that, and hopefully everybody's going to learn a lot.
When you get back, we'll have to talk about it for next week's show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What do you got next week?
Well, I know that you had contacted someone in the club about me flying with them, so maybe down the lakeshore at night or something. I'll have to check into that. My schedule is somewhat up in the air, but you have a student that's going to be hopefully trying for their check ride.
Yes.
And I want to make sure that especially if you're out of town, I want to go up with them and play safety pilot. And be the final practice run, if you will, before he takes his check. I'm more excited, I think, than he is.
Oh, absolutely. I think I'm really excited for him, too. He's there. We're going to... you know, he's, it's been, it's, he's worked really hard, and it's going to be just such a great feeling once he gets, the congratulations, you passed.
Well, it was when I got my instrument ticket, I do remember the DPE telling me, I don't know that I've seen anyone more excited than you about getting your rating. And she was really pleased. I mean, she was saying, you know, this is the way it should be. You should be proud, and this is exciting.
Yeah.
And so I feel that way for him. And today, I even said to my wife, because I got those low approaches, we were in clouds, it was night, it was, there's so much happened in terms of challenging me and making me use the license that I earned. I said, this instrument ticket is the best ticket to get of all of aviation. I loved it the whole day.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of opens up a new world, a new skill set, and everything like that. It's funny you mentioned the popping out of the clouds.
I wish I'd taken a video. That it was so beautiful.
We had part of some of these margins that we talked about earlier of me developing a respect for ICE with the general, you know, GA airplane. We were flying back from Champaign at 3,000 feet. The temperature was plus one. You know, there were pie reps at 4,000 feet for trace ice, and you know, that's not something I want to really deal with. And approach said, or Chicago Center, we were approaching the Chicago area. We're over Pontiac and heading towards the Plano intersection,
right,
and coming in the area. And Center said, hey, we got to climb you up to 4,000 feet. Approach isn't going to let you come in at 3. I'm like, well, we're unable. And he said, well, you know, we're unable too. And I'm like, well, I'm like, can you find, is there anybody else with any pie reps and everything like that? And people are saying, oh, at 5,000 feet, there's no, you know, negative ice. I'm like, okay, well, you know, another guy put a pie rep out, 4,000 feet, there's ice. But then I'm like, oh, man. So I changed the destination to Aurora and ended up, we changed the destination to Aurora. We were going to go shoot an approach.
Which is down near there.
Yeah,
right?
Aurora Airport, which is down, it was a couple, you know, 25 miles away from where we were going to go. Shoot an approach. We're going to get below the clouds and go back VFR to Palwaukee. But just as we had coordinated all this, we started skimming the tops of the clouds. And I'm like, hey, we can get up. We could change it back to Palwaukee now, our destination back to Palwaukee. We'll climb up to 4,000. It's clear above. We can see and everything. And the two college girls that we had in the back, our gentleman's daughters and her roommate, you know, I asked them, I looked back to them halfway through the flight and said, hey, how you doing? They're like, oh, we're good. I'm like, no, be honest. And they were like, yeah, we don't like being in the clouds. So when we actually climbed up, there was an applause. You hear this, you know, this clapping in the back once we, like, bust out of the lair, and it's like, ah, yes, this is awesome.
Yeah, actually coming in tonight, and I wanted to make sure, because there was a lot of moisture, and I wanted to make sure with a -1 that I wasn't getting ice.
Yeah.
It's pitch black other than the strobes, and I'm in the clouds. And so I kept taking the flashlight and looking at the windscreen in front of me, right, to see if it was on there, and then trying to pick it up on the leading edge of the wing.
Yeah.
Well, my wife, I think, is getting freaked out by it. She said, I was going to look out too, but I figured there's nothing I could do if it was, so I decided I didn't want to know, and I was just going to look down. And so when we broke out the bottom, and then, you know, I could just all of a sudden, I said, okay, you can breathe now. Because I think she held her breath for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got to remember our passengers. You know, I was fine. I knew it wouldn't accrete that fast.
Right.
But I wanted to be on top. I wanted to know what was happening, and it was making her nervous. So we always have to remember our passengers.
Right, absolutely. You know, that I totally agree about that. You know, what's interesting is that one thing that I've learned with general aviation airplanes is that how difficult it is to spot ice being, you know, accruing on a wing. A white wing in a white cloud, holy smokes.
You know, I was getting, and again with the flashlight out there, I was trying to see on the Cirrus, there's a little ridge.
Yeah.
Not a stall strip, but, or maybe that, whatever, that little thing on the front of the inboard wing. And I was, because I thought I was seeing ice on there, but it stuck out, and it was like an optical illusion. And so I got up in front, like, okay, no, it's still out protruding above the wing. So that's when I figured, no, it wasn't building. But up until then, I thought, am I losing that? Is that getting covered by ice?
Yeah, right. Oh, it's kind of interesting learning. I'm glad on the way down to Champaign, we picked up a very small trace of ice, and we immediately descended down to, we were 4,000, descended 3,000, and ice went away. And, you know, you learn that ice is a very isolated event.
Yep.
And, you know, a couple hundred feet can make a big difference. And then I was glad that we did pick up a trace, just so I can understand where, you know, you can identify with the ice builds.
Well, plus your student, right? That's just wonderful experience for him as well.
Exactly. So, you know, I appreciate that the FAA, you know, sent out their interpretation letter. You know, is a little bit more liberal than you know. I actually sat down and read it. I think I read it to you over the phone last
week. I think
week.
I sent it to you. Because I knew they had come out. I think it was in 2009. Maybe it was 2001. But I think it was 2009 when they clarified. Before that, it was always visible moisture and freezing temperatures.
Your hose. So it's actually, you know, part of it is that the actual physical accretion of ice. You know, that's known ice, and I'm like, that's pretty cool. You know, I think that's, and I appreciate that because ice is a very ice, you know, no
ice
point, isolated event and all that. But very good, a great learning experience is all week long.
You know, just this little conversation, your student that you have that you're going to Arizona with just tweeted me a couple times.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't mind if I read this tweet. Man, I can't wait to take this trip. I wish it was Monday already. And then I said, yeah, cool, you'll have a blast. And he said, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So the pressure's on you to make it an awesome experience, although with the airplane doing its thing, I'm sure that's all it'll take to really get his blood pumping.
Oh, absolutely. I think it is. I'm looking forward to it, too. It's going to be a great trip. You know, I told him that we have to pick a couple Class B airports to go in.
Oh, that'd be a great experience as well.
And
you're going to, like, go to Lambert or something? Are you heading down that way?
No. We're going to go to Kansas City. We're going to go to downtown airport.
No way!
On one of them. Way.
All right.
And,
you'll have to stop and say hi to my son.
Yes. then we're going to head to, I think we're going to aim for Albuquerque, and then the next spend the night in Albuquerque, then the next day go on to Phoenix, and then the next day after that maybe hit up LAX and start working our way back.
Wow.
Yeah,
actually Kansas City downtown, if you can get the visual, I think it's one right, and go by those TV towers, that is really, really cool. I mean, whoever's sitting right seat, I guess, will be, you look out and you go, that tower's kind of close.
Yeah.
Right? I wish there was an instrument approach on the side, and you'll have downtown there. I love going into that airport and that approach.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great, it's a cool airport.
It is, yeah. That used to be the airport before they built the current MCI.
Did
you ever fly into it?
The
downtown?
Yeah. Not for the airlines, but.
No.
But yeah, just, it's a beautiful airport. It's great. Great to bar, real close to barbecue. I mean, it's like literally a half mile from downtown.
What's your favorite barbecue in Kansas City?
Ooh, Interstate Barbecue.
Really, I haven't eaten there.
I saw it on the Food Network. It's like a half mile away from the downtown airport.
I'll have to frequent it in my next time in there.
Yeah,
I told you before. I like going to Oklahoma Joe's, that gas station that has the best barbecue.
Great place.
I hate to say this because I don't like dissing anyone, but oh my goodness, maybe this is karma too. I can't remember the name. The big name down there, besides like Oklahoma Joe's, one of the original ones, were downtown. They have the original, and then they have one out.
Arthur Bryant's.
I was not impressed.
Ooh.
You know, I like the atmosphere, and obviously they have a good crowd, and they have a great, great reputation, but I was expecting something a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely.
And I love Jack Stack, which is a little bit more upscale, but they have a great steakhouse there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, cool.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It's getting to be that time, isn't it?
It really is. It's 10 p.m.
10 p.m., and Alex is hungry. Alex, I got some pizza left here.
Yeah. But anyway, that was an awesome show.
Yeah, I was a little afraid. I have to admit it, and I admit this to our listenership as well. You know, I came in with a lot of adrenaline, but at the same time, it's been a draining day for me, a draining weekend. And I came in thinking, guys, the energy going to be there, but as always, just getting to talk about it and having the great guests that we do.
Well, here's exactly here's Glenn a great example of what the guys at the Aviation Access Project are doing, and how quickly that could spread. Is that their passion? You know, we both have had long days. We're both excited about the show, but then their passion leaks over to the show.
It's contagious.
We know that what they're up to is definitely going to work.
Yeah, I'm going to spend some time. You know, I've been out to their Facebook page already, and like you said, they're pretty active on it.
Yeah.
Which is whatever, but Aviation Access Project, and here at www.aviationproject.com is the website, and info@aviationaccessproject.com for information, or the following phone number, 256-705-3504. Also, you can reach out and talk to them live.
Yeah, definitely. Well, very good. Well, anyway, good show tonight.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Thank you to our studio audience that came in too. Next time we need to have like standing mics and headphones so they can
absolutely open mic,
hot
mic, stock
with
mic.
With the button to. The dump button, just in case.
Yeah, absolutely. But feel free to stop on by anytime if you're in the area at the Chicago Executive Airport.
Not next Sunday. I think next Sunday we're going to be pre-recorded.
Yes, we are.
Because of the holiday.
Holiday.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
So that's good, but I hope you have a great week. I hope you have a great week, too.
I
will. Thank you.
And I hope everybody else has a great week.
Yeah, and if we, for those of you that maybe can't join us next week, we certainly wish all of you a happy and healthy holiday, and, of course, to everyone, a happy new year.
Absolutely.
And we also say tailwinds.
Tailwinds and blue skies.
Blue skies. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.